Hey, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I'm just popping in to tell you that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinsel. These are challenging times for healthcare regulators in Vermont. The Green Mountain Care Board recently gave its approval to double-digit rate increases for both Blue Cross and MVP. The rising cost of prescription drugs, higher utilization, and the failure of state government to provide sufficient reimbursement to healthcare providers in the Medicaid program are some of the major factors. Board Chairman Kevin Mullen is concerned about the affordability of healthcare Vermont in the future.
If commercial rates continue to rise the way they did this year, people are going to drop their insurance. And that's going to put pressure onto the Medicaid program. It's going to put pressure on the hospitals for free and uncompensated care.
A number of Vermont's rural hospitals are also facing some serious financial issues, in part because of the state's new payment reform programs. So where is all of this headed? That's one of the questions we have for our guest today, Green Mountain Care Board Chairman Kevin Mullen. Kevin, great to have you back on the program.
Good to be here, Bob.
You know, I was looking, Kevin, at really the responsibility of the Green Mountain Care Board when you review a rate hike request. And one is to maintain the affordability of coverage in Vermont. But there's a secondary responsibility, which is to ensure the solvency of the insurance companies. Have we reached a point today where these two responsibilities are somewhat in conflict with each other?
I think they've always been in conflict with each other, and I have to be careful what I say because we're under a 30-day appeal window that doesn't technically end till what would be tomorrow, which makes it Monday. But, you know, the board tries very, very hard to balance the conflicting statutory requirements when it's making decisions. And I think that it's important to understand that in the QHP market, we're talking about a little less than 75,000 lives. Blue Cross has around 44,000, MVP around 31,000. And what you don't want is to Vermonters not to have a choice in that market, or God forbid, have no choice. And because this is a market that does have subsidies for individuals who have their insurance in the QHP market, so you want them to continue to be able to get that help to pay for their premium. So you want them to have options in that market. And so it becomes a very, very difficult job to balance all those needs. And we don't have the ability to force anybody to provide a product when they're losing money on it. And one of the things that we try to make sure is that nobody is reaping excessive what I would call administrative expenses and things like that. But at the same time, we want them to be able to afford to pay the claims that are put in by people that have that insurance. So it's a balancing act, and I think the board does its very best to do that.
Because there may be some people who are listening who are saying Blue Cross got a 14% increase, MVP got a 10% increase. How could the Green Mountain Care Board give them those increases is what they're thinking.
Well, Blue Cross got 12.4, MVP got 10.1. But what the board was thinking is we do a lot of actuarial analysis and look at the trends, what the loss ratio experiences were on the book of business for the previous year. We look at changes in federal and state laws and regulations and tax structures. We take a look at all the different things that are facing the entity, and then we come up with an approach that allows them to offer that business without making excessive profits, but at the same time not putting them out of business.
I think I've heard you say several times in the last few months, we are not on a sustainable path. What has to give here in order for affordability and sustainability to be part of our healthcare system?
So again, I just want to point out that this is about 75,000 lives in Vermont. And because of the nature of some of the changes that have occurred, these lives are less healthy than some lives in other private insurance plans. Years ago, you wouldn't have seen a self-insured plan for a business or an organization of less than 100 people. Now we're seeing them all the way down to 20 people. And so what's left are the less healthy individuals that are having to be covered by the plans. And I would say there are a number of factors that are somewhat outside of the control of the state of Vermont, although I would argue that they're not totally outside of the control of the state of Vermont. So, for example, in the Blue Cross filing, prescription drugs was especially a major part of their increase, more so than MVP. MVP was about 2.2%. Blue Cross was about 7.8%. And the reason for that is Blue Cross has a less healthy population than MVP does, for example. And so people say, well, can the state of Vermont really do that much? And I would say the state's real obligations are to continue to press with our congressional delegation the reforms that need to occur in D.C. to try to put a lid on these exorbitant increases. And the biggest driver are specialty drugs. And specialty drugs are very, very expensive. They deal with things like cancer, leukemia, hepatitis. And some of these drugs could cost $100,000. So they're six-figure drugs. On the same token, you're saving someone's life. You're not putting them through the more intensive and harder on the body traditional treatments of chemo where you're getting nausea and everything else. So they're doing good things. The question is, can they be doing those very good things for less of a cost? And then you start to look at, well, the United States puts a lot of money into the drug companies' pockets as far as research and development costs through the National Institutes of Health, and yet often these companies will amortize the rest of the development costs only on the U.S. market and not on a worldwide market. The U.S. is one of only a couple of countries that allows for television advertising.
Would you do away with that?
I would. You know, I think that the proper marketing is to the doctors, not to people on television, to see that you know, this is the latest and greatest thing to get rid of your fungus on your toenail, and yet it's, you know, $600 or $700 to get that prescription. I think that's something that is just driving demand. The U.S. is also one of the few countries that are developed that refuses to really negotiate with drug companies to basically limit market share, so that if there are a number of statins, other countries actually negotiate. They get the best deal, and that statin is the one that's used by the citizens there. Whereas in the U.S., we have always believed in total choice, and with that total choice comes a price. And so if we're willing to pay for that price, then so be it. But I would say that many Americans can't afford to make that choice. They just don't have the dollars to do it.
Now, the Scott administration is seeking a waiver from the federal government to be able to re-import drugs from Canada, but there were some reports recently that indicated that the savings on that plan really wouldn't be all that great, even though the costs of these drugs in Canada are sometimes a third of what they're charging in the United States. So how important is that effort in this overall quest to reduce pharmaceutical costs?
So when Vermont started down the path, The other state that had been a pioneer in trying to do this was Utah. And if you take a look, if it was Vermont and Utah, maybe things would have been okay for a few years as far as much reduced prices. But now you have Florida looking into doing it. And, you know, the executives at drug companies aren't stupid. They're going to make sure that they do whatever they can to make sure that they keep their profit margins. And so they're going to make it very difficult for Canada to have that to occur. And Canadians want to protect the price advantage that they have. So they're not looking to necessarily say, yes, we want to export as many of these drugs as possible from Canada to the United States because they want to protect the advantage that they do have. So there's problems with that plan. I think it still should be pursued. And, everything needs to be pursued until we get to the point where we have a national conversation about how we're going to do this properly so that we don't shut off because we want people to invest in research for new drugs. We don't want people to stop trying to find, for example, a cure for Alzheimer's. I mean, this is the type of thing that puts people at federal government in a real quandary because they want to make sure that the research continues. But at the same token, everybody wants cost containment.
Let's go to our callers and start off today with Lewis, who's calling from South Burlington. Hi, Lewis. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. One issue that you haven't talked about yet is the monopoly power of the University of Vermont and how that's affected pricing. And it's not unique to Vermont. We've seen this in regions across the country where one healthcare system begins to buy up all of the hospitals and practices and establishes a monopoly and then uses it as monopolies tend to do, which is to drive up their prices. And especially true in a state like Vermont where we, as Mr. Mullen said, we have only two commercial health insurances. So anyone who's gone to the University of Vermont knows that you're going to pay 2 to 3 times the cost for any service line, even something as simple as lab draws, that you would for an independent practice. And I think that's been a huge drive toward higher prices in Vermont.
Lewis, thanks for your phone call. Kevin, what about that?
So Lewis brings up an important conversation, and that is, are we letting one institution become too big to fail? On the flip side of that, though, is we have a national crisis with rural hospitals. We've seen 107 hospitals across the United States close in the last 10 years. And one of the ways to create the sustainability for a small rural hospital is to do that affiliation. And we've seen that model work very well here in Vermont. So, for example, Porter just a few years ago was in a very bad position. And they began talks with UVM. They're part of the network now. And they're really doing okay. And, on the flip side of that, we have the crisis that's unfolding in Springfield, where they were really wanted to do it on their own. They didn't want any affiliation. And we're seeing the struggles there. So, again, it's not an easy yes, no. And, Lewis is always – I know who the caller is because I've had a lot of conversations with Lewis. And he's a very thoughtful individual. But on the same token, I'm not so sure that – we should be pointing fingers at our one academic medical center because they are training our doctors. They are creating the providers. And across the country, academic medical centers do get reimbursed more than their counterparts because people are acknowledging that they are the ones that are training the people that if we, God forbid, need a heart operation, are going to give it to us. So it's not an easy question.
Let's talk to Noah, who's calling from Heartland. Hi, Noah. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Well, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to throw in a perspective from the standpoint of being a mental health provider. I struggle with, and I've had conversations with my colleagues, we struggle with low reimbursement rates, which throws a damper on many of us accepting or wanting to accept insurance. So that's part of the problem. For me, however, I do accept some insurance, simply because as a clinical social worker, I feel that it's ethically responsible and necessary to accept insurance. Not many people have the ability to pay, but the complexities inherent in getting paneled and filing claims. I mean, even as recently as today, I was speaking with a colleague who lamented how complex it is to file for claims, and how just a small oversight on this big form can lead to a denial. I guess I'd love to see it just be a little bit easier to participate in insurance.
Okay, Noah, thanks very much for your phone call. Is that something within the jurisdiction of the Green Mountain Care Board?
Well, I would say not really in our statutory role, but the Green Mountain Care Board is dedicated to creating parity in healthcare, and it really should be the same whether you're a physical health provider or a mental health provider. And I will say that we hear the exact same complaints from traditional docs as what we've just heard here, is that the administrative burden of being a provider in the state of Vermont just continues to grow and increase. And that's not what doctors went to med school for. They went for that direct patient care, and that's what they want to focus on. And they really feel that, like everybody else's life in today's world, there's way too much paperwork and way too much administrative burden.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today in the program, looking at healthcare costs in Vermont, with us today, Kevin Mullen, who is the chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board. I want to talk to you for a moment about the so-called cost shift. It might be a little bit of a wonky topic, but it really does seem to have an incredibly important impact on private insurance rates. And basically, the cost shift would come in several categories, and correct me if I'm wrong. The government reimburses Medicaid healthcare providers, at about 55, 60, 65% of the actual cost.
It depends upon the procedure.
Medicare is higher, but still maybe in the mid-80s. Then we have things like bad debt, and somebody has to pay all these costs, and it turns out to be the private health insurance companies. Your organization, your board, estimated that it's almost half a billion dollars a year. Now, that's a lot of money. The insurance companies say, well, if we didn't have to pick up these costs, our rates could be considerably lower. You wrote a letter to the governor about this. What would you like to see done?
Well, the reality is that the cost shift is really made up of a number of components, Medicaid being the one that the state of Vermont can best easily address. Medicare does pay less than actual cost. At one point, it was close to that. Then we had sequestration and other things. But I would think that what we would want to do, at least from a regulatory perspective, is try to get hospitals and providers to be more efficient so they actually could break even on Medicare reimbursement. So bad debt and free care, there is no magic bullet to take care of that cost shift, and that's going to continue. But Medicaid, the state is the lowest payer. And the state tries very, very hard to make sure those payments don't get worse than what they actually are. And having been a former legislator, I know what that's like. And for a number of years, every year when it came to budget adjustment, we were looking for $20 million or more to try to take care of the Medicaid rolls. And yet, as of late, Medicaid, the cost increases have been fairly stable. They've been lower than the rate of regular inflation and much lower than the rate of medical inflation. And in doing that, it just creates more of a shift. And what you talked about is we're estimating that cost shift in total will be about $493 million in 2019. And of that, about $217 million is related to the Medicaid cost shift. And all that we're asking is for the administration, the legislators, to try to maximize their ability to leverage federal funds. In 2017, the most recent waiver that was negotiated, there were dollars for investments in delivery system reform. We know that we're near the cap, and we know that every administration worries that if you hit the cap and, God forbid, there's a downturn in the economy, then you're really in trouble because then it's really upon state dollars to make up that. On the flip side of that, we believe that Vermont has a strong strategy moving forward to try to improve the healthcare system, not only in quality but also in cost. And that strategy is the all-payer model, which is a move away from fee-for-service to value-based medicine with more of an emphasis on prevention and wellness. And unfortunately, the burden of the reform efforts have – the cost of those reform efforts, the majority of that burden has fallen upon hospitals to make that investment. And it's also fallen on commercial ratepayers. And it's just a – we weren't trying to point fingers at anybody in state government, either the administration or the legislature. We were just trying to start a conversation about could we do a little bit more to get closer to the caps and, you know, get that federal match. Because if it's just on the backs of commercial payers, there is no match. So it's really a hidden tax that we're seeing. And one of the questions that we had this year in the budget process was if a procedure cost $100 for Medicare, what would that same procedure cost for Medicaid or for commercial insurance? And at the high end of the spectrum, we've seen numbers where, for example, in Rutland, if you had the same procedure that cost $100 for Medicare, well, I shouldn't say cost, what the hospital was actually reimbursed for, the hospital is getting reimbursement of $230 to $260 from commercial insurance. So you can see that insurance could be a lot cheaper if there wasn't this large cost shift. And in fact, Blue Cross themselves acknowledged in this year's proceedings that it could be about 16.8% cheaper if the cost shift was eliminated. So Vermonters are going to pay one way or the other. And our thinking is that if you can leverage the federal match, you're much better off doing that than just placing it on the backs of the commercial payers.
We wanted to get some legislative reaction to this idea of increasing funding for the Medicaid program, going closer to the total cap and taking some of the burden off of private health insurance payers. And joining us right now is Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ash, who's been keeping a close eye on this issue. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
So what are your thoughts about this? You're looking at these rate increases. You're looking at a cost shift that could be almost $500 million. As Kevin Mullen just told us, somebody's going to pay it. It's either going to be through higher private health insurance rates or through state government allocating more money. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I want to begin by saying I don't envy the work that Kevin has on the Green Mountain Care Board. All across the country, healthcare costs are crushing families, individuals, small businesses, and government budgets, as well as businesses. And we really are not an island when it comes to these challenges. But I do feel that I have some concern by the rush to believe that we need to raise more taxes to spend more on Medicaid as a solution to this problem. I think most Vermonters have identified the tax burden as a concern and the amount of healthcare spending as a concern. So to me, I don't see that the logical first step is to raise more taxes, exacerbating that problem, in order to spend more on healthcare, exacerbating that problem. I think one of the key features of the all-payer model that Kevin's been discussing, and which I believe has a lot of promise, is about the whole healthcare system in Vermont, such as it is a system, imposing more discipline to make sure that the spending is at the most efficient level possible. So when the insurance companies, and frankly, whoever, talks about the so-called Medicaid cost shift, which is a concept which is debated amongst healthcare economists and healthcare policy thinkers, it also could be said that excess spending, meaning spending at either hospitals or medical practices or others that is in excess of what's required, that also creates a cost shift burden on policyholders of Blue Cross or MVP or Cigna or whoever else. So I think we need to really make sure that we're driving hospital and other health provider spending as efficiently as possible, as low as possible, while delivering good quality, before we turn to what has historically been the easiest solution, which is just to raise more tax money to throw it at the problem.
Well, when you talk about raising more tax money to throw it at the problem, don't you have a situation, some people might think, that if you're reimbursing Medicaid for healthcare providers at 55, 60, 65% of the cost of it, then state government really hasn't kept up its obligation in this area?
Well, the flip side of that argument, Bob, is that if state government starts pumping more money in for reimbursements across the board for all sorts of procedures, it actually creates even less incentive to push our hospital providers to provide medical procedures at the lowest cost necessary. If we continue to solve our healthcare spending problem by providing ever more dollars to spend even more, there will never truly be an incentive for the administrators of our various hospitals and other practices to make sure they're spending as efficiently as possible. So whether it's the level of administrative expense, new positions at huge salaries, whether it's discipline in terms of new construction of facilities and modifications to facilities, electronic health records, all of those things need to be scrutinized in the exact same way that school districts are asked to monitor their spending very closely, the way small businesses have to monitor their spending with great scrutiny. And so the idea that we will create more efficiency by papering over what might be overspending in some cases by giving them more money just doesn't stand to reason.
Let's bring Kevin Mullen into this conversation. Kevin, what about some of these points that Senator Ash is making?
They're all great points. I would just say that I would ask President Ash to really focus on maximizing delivery system reform dollars. And in order to make the type of changes that are necessary to move from a fee-for-service system to one that has much more emphasis on prevention and wellness and focusing on treating somebody, for example, that's pre-diabetic rather than waiting for them to become a full-blown diabetic, there have to be changes made in the system. And I know that the caps are very tough to deal with, but any dollars that could be put into delivery system reform would be a major step. And I would just ask Tim to keep an open mind, and I'm sure he will.
Well, and just quickly respond, and Kevin and I agree on much about healthcare and healthcare reform, and so I'm glad that he's in a position to be helping move our system into a more rational place. The legislature has been making some investments in the last few years using Medicaid dollars, and I'd use three specific examples. The first is this year we made a very significant increase in dental access for Medicaid members, which is the first significant increase in a couple decades. We've also made major investments on the mental health front, which should help reduce the utilization of hospital ERs and other hospital services. And then lastly, and this is really important, and I know Kevin and I and others agree on this, is we've increased reimbursement rates for primary care services through Medicaid. And there has been a real nationwide recognition that the slow starvation diet primary care has been put on as hospital inpatient costs have skyrocketed over the years has really been to the detriment of the whole system. So I think we need to continue to shift resources towards these primary and preventive services. That's where the legislature has really spent its dollars carefully in the last few budget cycles, and we'll want to work with the Green Mountain Care Board and others to make sure we continue on that path.
And primary care is so important to be spending the dollars on, and that's really the center of what the all-payer model is all about. When you take a look at other countries that have outcomes that are better quality outcomes in the U.S. at sometimes half the cost, the real difference is that in those countries, there are twice as many primary care providers as specialists, and we have it the exact opposite in the U.S. And I can understand if I was a medical student facing those high student loan debts that I would want to be a specialist too, because the reimbursement is just so much better when you're in those specialties.
And Tim, just briefly, do you think part of the problem and something that needs to be looked at is whether or not Vermont's hospitals have some duplication of expensive procedures and somehow this has to be restructured?
Well, I think the whole concept of the all-payer model and the umbrella organization OneCare, which is effectively administering it, has to be looking at those questions. About 2 years ago, I asked the Blueprint for Health, which is a state agency that tries to monitor public health measures and investments, to do a price variation report. And what that means is they took 10 high-volume medical procedures and determined how much each hospital in the state was reimbursed for the exact same procedures. And they put out a report, which is on their website. And what it showed was that the 13 different providers across the state, if you went in for something like a shoulder replacement or a chest x-ray or a colonoscopy or some of these high-volume services, the variation in what the provider is reimbursed, it's a great variance from facility to facility. There are some providers, for instance, who do orthopedic surgeries, very few of them, and at a very high cost to Blue Cross or MVP or whoever's reimbursing them. So I think we really do need to ask some questions about whether low-volume procedures being performed at very high cost at some providers should be migrated towards nearby facilities where the cost is lower and they perform far more of the procedures, which also incidentally usually leads to higher quality procedures.
Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ash, many thanks for taking the time to be on the program today.
Thank you.
Kevin, what about that last thought that Senator Ash had, that you do have some hospitals, low volume, high cost, as opposed to other places that might have greater volume and lower cost? Does that have to be looked at?
It does. In fact, Board Member Jessica Holmes brings that up quite often during the budget hearings. And basically, the data is there that shows that, and it doesn't really take a lot of research to really conclude this, that if you're doing more of a procedure, you get better at it and you find efficiencies. And so a hospital that's doing, you know, three or four of a particular procedure during a year span, for example, they probably should be thinking about, should we really be doing this in the future? And I think that's what Dr. Holmes has been pushing for in her questioning, to try to get those conversations going. And, you know, Bob, you said in the preface to the show, one of the points that you raised was, should Vermont have 14 hospitals? And that's not necessarily something that the Green Mountain Care Board should be the arbiter of that decision. But on the same token, I think what you're seeing is that natural economics is forcing those conversations about whether or not we can support 14 hospitals trying to do more than what's probably the optimal amount of work that they should be doing. And what's so alarming is that we know that some small hospitals charge some of the higher prices, not all, just a few, and they're losing big dollars. So do you push them even further and place them in jeopardy? We don't want to see a rapid procession of hospitals closing in Vermont, and I think that we'd much rather work with hospitals to try to get them to come to conclusions that make them more sustainable and make them viable into the future, because no matter where that hospital is located, the community depends upon it. And you see that when a hospital leaves a community, you see a decline in property values, you see a decline in salaries in that area. And so our objective is really to try to work with hospitals, their boards, their administrators, to try to come up with sustainable plans so that they have a viable future, so that they exist well into the next century.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at healthcare in Vermont. Our guest today, Green Mountain Care Board Chairman Kevin Mullen. Let's talk to Keith in Burlington. Hey, Keith, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I'm on Medicaid myself, and I'm very sympathetic to the need for more funding in the Medicaid system. I think the Trump tax cuts gave us a cushion that the state could work with. A lot of wealthy folks saw a big tax cut last year. I'm concerned about the proposal by Chairman Mullen to put the money into helping hospitals get on board with One Care Vermont, the for-profit company run by the hospital networks. I know the legislators are going to be talking about raises for low-wage home health agency and nursing home workers this coming legislative session around the minimum wage bill. And I think we really should be putting our money towards folks' health care and towards raising wages, decent wages for people in the health care system. I'm concerned that this would represent a bailout for One Care Vermont. And I'd be curious the chairman's response. Thank you.
Sure. I don't see it as a bailout for One Care Vermont. What I see it as is putting the responsibility for changing the way we deliver care in Vermont on a broader base. And what we had in that waiver negotiation with the federal government a few years ago is the ability to access what has been termed investment dollars. And those investment dollars would help us to try to do things. So, for example, Rise Vermont, a program that started in St. Albans, tries to create better wellness for individuals through physical activity and nutrition and things like that. Investment in those type of activities, investment in better nutrition, those are the type of things that could be leveraged through those investment dollars that were available in that waiver. And that's really where I'm focused on, is trying to help transform the system away from the current system that just rewards providers for each time they do a procedure or a test, and actually rewards providers who are keeping their patients healthy.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John, who is calling from Burlington. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a retired surgeon, and I worked for 35 years after I finished my training. Training, by the way, beginning with first grade, when I hung out my shingle, I had just finished 25th grade. In any event, regarding Medicare for All, studies have shown that comparable times, Medicare for All will cost $3 trillion, whereas leaving the system exactly the way it is now will cost $5 trillion. So the question is, where is that extra money? Well, it's going into the administration of those dollars, and that's basically going into the pockets of the 1%. But from a physician standpoint of view, I quit because the fun part of what I did, surgery, got to about 5% of my week's work. The rest was all paperwork. I was not trained to do that. The point that I'd like to make about the money is that as a private surgeon, I was unable to have any control over my reimbursement. That is, I could charge 100 times what I charge, but I got no change in the amount from Medicaid, no change in the amount from Medicare. And the Blue Cross Blue Shield people, et cetera, all had their own fee schedules, and they set them up so that you either sign up with us or you are not considered a participating provider, and of course, people won't come and see you. In the state of Vermont,
I appreciate your phone call, John, but you raised some very interesting questions, and we're running out of time, and I want to give Kevin Mullen an opportunity to respond to that. Kevin, I am sure there are a lot of people listening raising the same point that John in Burlington raised, which is the problem here is the private health insurance companies. If we had Medicare for all, if we had a government-run system, it would be more efficient, and they wouldn't have these high administrative costs, and it would be a more sustainable system. Is that something that your organization is looking at?
Not really. And I would say that basically a Medicare for all program could work. It has to be a national program, and my big concerns on that would be to make sure that Vermonters were protected, because Vermonters, for the most part, are covered for more types of medical care than people in other parts of the country. And that would be my fear, that we would see a downgrade in the quality of care for Vermonters. Vermont let's not be totally negative today, because Vermont has one of the best healthcare systems in the country, and we're always rated in usually the top couple of states as far as healthcare outcomes and healthcare delivery. So I think it's possible to do it. I think that it's a discussion we need to have as a nation, and hopefully that discussion focuses not just on cost but on quality.
We're almost out of time. Tell us a couple of things that you'd really like to see lawmakers do this winter to address healthcare in Vermont.
Well, we never even talked about workforce today, Bob, and I could tell you that workforce is the biggest pressure on the budgets that hospitals are seeing in the state of Vermont. And what I'd like to see is some changes that the legislature started working on last year to try to make it easier for someone to get a nursing degree, to make it easier for someone to become a PA or an NP or a doctor. That would be what I would hope would be the biggest focus, is a real focus on the workforce, because we have a crisis.
Is part of that crisis the aging of this workforce?
It's the aging of the workforce. It's also the aging of the population, as we need more health care as we're older. And this is not a Vermont problem. It's a nationwide problem, and it's especially rampant in the Northeast. So many people say, well, it's the rural nature of Vermont. But if you look at it, access times in Boston and Albany are growing too. And so it's a problem that you're not going to be able to win an arms race with some of these larger states. So you really have to grow your own.
A lot of important issues we'll be following in the weeks and months ahead. Kevin Mullen, chairperson of the Green Mountain Care Board, many thanks for taking the time to be on the program today. It's a fascinating issue. There are so many issues.
There are a ton of issues, a lot of which we didn't get to today. But, you know, Bob, healthcare is something that everyone uses, and we hope that everyone has the absolute best healthcare.
Kevin, thanks very much for being on the program.
Thank you, Bob.